Okay, let's see. I hope is the microphone working? Can everyone hear me? Okay, next question, because there was a comment last time. Can you read this even from the back? Or should I make it even bigger? Okay, fantastic. Then let's get started. Welcome to the third lecture of our course on XML. Today we will start with the logical structure of XML, and this is basically the core of XML. So this is with the logical structure you define your own language, you write the grammar basically for your language, and that is what we're going to start with today to show how can we define elements, how can we define attributes, etc. And, of course, what that means for the XML document. Just as a reminder, the deadline for the first assignment is tomorrow at 4. And I know that Henry last time talked a bit about well-formed and valid documents. So if you remember, a well-formed document, it means that it complies with the how to write XML, so that you always have a start tag, an end tag, how it's nested, etc. And the difference to a valid document is, a valid document means the document is well-formed and it complies to the rules of the language. So what that exactly means, we will see in this lecture. If we look at this slide, we have a DTD or XML schema. DTD stands for document type definition, and it's the basic standard and most simple form how to define our own XML language. If you remember, XML is a meta language. I know meta is an annoying term, but it basically means it's a language to define languages. And in this DTD, we basically define our language. We say what is a valid expression of the language, what are the components of the language. DTD is, as I said, the most simple form to do that. The XML schema, we will touch that very, very briefly in this lecture. Next lecture, actually. It's a bit more sophisticated one that addresses limitations of DTD. So a valid document is well-formed and follows the rules of the language that we set ourselves, or that someone else said if we use the language of someone else. And again, as a reminder, if you use something like Notepad or other simple languages that support tools that support XML documents, even if they claim they validate the document, they don't. They just check if it's well-formed. So please use the World Wide Web Consortium validator for everything. So this lecture and next lecture are about the logical structure. XML uses start and end tags as the container. As you can see down there, and as you have seen in some examples, you have tags, and they contain content. And then we can have an element. The element is the start tag, the content, and the end tag. And the logical structure basically is the structure of elements that we have. Last time you started to look at tree structures of XML, and that's basically how you can think of the logical structure. The logical structure is a tree structure. We have one root element and then child elements for each of the, or can have child elements. And those elements are then the building blocks of an XML document. So if we look at Eclipse, we have a root element, which is the poem, and then we have child elements that belong to the root element. So again, an element can have child elements and siblings, and they form a tree structure. Here the example of date, year, and month. One might say, or one might mark it differently, for example, that date is the overall, then we have the year contains month, and the month contains days, etc. So there are many different ways how to do it. But you can see here that we have a date. In the date, we have day, month, and year, which means that date, as the most outer one, is the root element. And then we can see, so we have here the date that goes from one side to another, and inside the date we have day, we have month, and we have year. So all of these elements are within the date element, which means they are child elements of date. They belong to date, and that is then represented in the tree structure. I know that Henry said that there were some discussions or problems also with the tree structure. So maybe we can start with one short exercise. So I shared this poem XML also in Optima, so if you have your computer, you can open it. Maybe you can, for a couple of minutes, alone or in a short group, think about what would be the tree structure of this document. How would it actually look like? I can't show it, unfortunately, completely in this big font, but so this is what it looks like. Maybe just 2 or 3 minutes, think about it, and then we can discuss it. So scroll down. Okay, did everyone finish, or do you still need a bit of time? Let me know. Okay, maybe we can simply start and I can draw it here, the tree. So we always have a root element. What is the root element here? What do you think? Poem. Poem has child elements. Which ones? How many? Yeah? 4 child elements. I have to check if that's correct, because I can't see the document from here and I don't know it by heart. Yes. Well, there are that shows already different. There are many different tree structures in XML. You will see later there are many different representations. of trees. In some, it would have four. In some, it would have five, because some would duplicate. We can see it has two times the stanza. Some would duplicate it, write it twice, and some would just write it once, because it says it's a child element. How often it occurs doesn't matter in the tree. But it's for the better understanding here, we take five, and those are then, I think, you probably can't read this, but author, what was it, date, title, and two times stanza, yes. And then which of these elements have child elements? Just the stanza. And it has, I don't know how many, but many times just the line. That's all to transfer an XML document into a tree. And if we want to do it the other way around, it's very simple. We know we have a root element, then we can just go per row from the left to the right, say which elements are there, and then see which one has child elements as well. So we start with the author. Look, does it have child elements? No. Okay, so I don't have to write anything there. We can maybe do that with another example. If we just take a structure, for example, very simple. Like this. A, B, C, D, D, and also here D. If we have a tree structure like that, and we want to transform it to XML, we can see, okay, the root element is A, so we start with A, somewhere A will end. Then we have the first child element that is B. And we can see B has two times the D child element, so it's just D, and again, D. Then we go, there are no other child elements, so we can go to the next one, which is C. And we can see C also has a child element, which is D. And then we just created the XML document that is according to that tree. I think it's very, very easy way to understand the structure of an XML document. Last time someone asked, why is the tree structure needed? First of all, of course, easier communication. If we don't think about a XML document like this, but let's take this war game. I think this is this is the DTD. This is actually the XML document. If we look at that, the structure might not be immediately clear to everyone. And it's very, very hard if we want to communicate on the structure, if we want to think about, do we maybe need some other child element somewhere? Is something missing? It's very hard to communicate. But if you represent it in a tree, it's much easier. And the second, in my opinion, almost more important reason is usually when we create XML documents, we don't start with a tree and we don't start with a XML document. We start with some textual description, like the university wants to store all of their documents in a XML-based database. Every document should have an author and a publishing date and so on. So then we have to analyze the text and see what are elements there, how are they related, and it's much easier to first translate something like that into a tree than to immediately start to write an XML document based on it. So that's, for me, why a tree representation is very, very helpful. And I think it's not very hard to transfer a tree into a XML document and the other way around. Okay. And of course, if we would add another element here, as whatever we want to add here, like usually you wouldn't add that as a element, maybe as a attribute, but if we want to add the element language here, then we just in the tree have to add one other child element. Well, doesn't matter where now that is language, and that adjusts it then. So that is the main thing about trees and tree representation of XML documents. Are there any questions still to the tree representation? Now is the time, as you have to do it in your first exercise. If you have any questions, go ahead. Okay, apparently not. Then let's continue. So how to define the logical structure? So basically how to define the tree structure that is allowed in our document. XML is a language, a meta language, but all the languages we create are also languages, obviously. And structure of languages are defined by grammars. If we think about our normal language, natural language that we speak, we have grammars, we have rules that tell us how a sentence has to be structured, where which word has to be, etc., to make a meaningful sentence. And in XML, the document type definition, DTD, is one way to do that. And what the DTD does, it defines the accepted elements and attributes. So it defines, we have a poem element, we have a language element, we have an author element, etc. And it defines the structure of it. So it says language or author is a child element of poem. It also tells us that in this case, stanza can occur more than one time in a poem. So those are the things we define. And there are two ways how to do that. You can give the declaration locally. So that's what you see here in this one. Here we have the DTD and directly the XML document afterwards. Or you can have it externally. Here is just an external DTD, and I don't know where I have an example that has it, but then you can just refer to an external document where the grammar is defined. Okay. Let's start with elements. How can we define an element? So, an element is always defined through this element tag with the smaller than mark and exclamation mark, and then in capital letters element. Then comes the element name, and then comes what is usually called the content spec, so the content specification. And the content can be empty, meaning we have an empty element. Sometimes you want to use that just for the structure. We don't want to constrain it at all. then we write any, or consist of mixed content, content and children, and of child elements. So if we look at the example, we take now just the poem, the very simple poem DTD. Here we can maybe remove these quickly. Okay, here you can see we define the element poem with the smaller than exclamation mark element. Then we give the name poem, and then in brackets just the child elements. So author, date, title, stencil, stencil. The same as we did in the tree. Now, if we use this, we know we have an element poem, and it has the following child elements: author, date, title, stencil, stencil. That is the first thing. I can also just write, remove all of this, and write any. I have never actually seen any in use, because usually we want to restrict the content of some elements. What is the point if we say a grammar, we define a language and say, oh, in this language everything is allowed. It doesn't really help us. But there might be some cases. But this would also be a possibility because everything is allowed. We can just write empty, which means the element would be empty, no child elements, no content. In this case, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Or we define child elements. What the other parts mean, we come to now. If we want to define elements with only text content, the element should only contain the PC data. It's important to use the hashtag PC data. We will get to why. Remember one thing, because there is also a thing called C data. There is PC data and C data. PC data with a hashtag, C data without a hashtag. For elements, always PC data. For attributes, always C data. I will repeat that many times when we get to attributes and examples. So we just have element, then the element name, and PC data, and that means we can define an element like this. If we look at the example, basically all, maybe we can use this one, basically all child elements of the poem are defined as elements that just contain text. What does that mean? They can't contain any child elements, and they can contain text. So if we look at this, we have here author Edgar Allan Poe is the content of the author. If we would now write in here something like this, we can see, or I don't know if you can see it, here changed already the color. Here it is underlined. So it immediately tells me there is an error because author can't have, is not allowed to have the child, any child elements because we didn't define them in our language. If we would want to allow that, we would have to change the grammar of the language. So that means, if we want to add, again, here the language, now, again, we get an error because the language element is not defined as part, in this case, as part of stanza. But if we would add here language as an allowed element, did I write something? No. Then if I validate it now, it shouldn't be a problem. Of course, I also have to define the element language. Now I write any. And this should then. Then we defined a new element that belongs to it. What those pluses, etc., mean, we will get to later. But this is the very basics, how you can define child elements of a element and how you can define content of an element. Are there questions about that? Because this is really the basics. If there are questions, please ask anytime. Okay. As I said before, we have hashtag PC data and we have C data. The hashtag PC data stands for parsed character data. That means the parser or the processor or the validator analyzes it and checks if there are other tags in there. In C data, it doesn't do that. We could, in some cases, use C data also for elements, but in this course, really remember the PC data with the hashtag is for elements, the C data is for attributes. So if we would use, if we don't use PC data, but C data, if we would have markup in the element content, it wouldn't recognize if there are any other tags inside. It couldn't see that because it just interprets everything as text. Okay. So, to recap, element declarations always have the form smaller than exclamation mark element in capital letters, then the element name, and then the content of the element. Important thing, element names have to be unique, obviously. We can't use the same element name for two different elements. We can't define an element twice. So an element is identified by its name. And child elements are declared by listing them in brackets afterwards, as we have seen in the document. One important thing, definition of order of child elements. So you saw in the document the child elements were comma separated. A comma separation means that they are successive, meaning in our case we have poem defined as the author with the child elements author, date, title, and stanza. That means in the XML document, because we have them comma separated, they have to come exactly in that order. We define the order of the elements. So we couldn't just move the title row. First of all, if we remove the title, you can see we get an error in poem because the expected child element title is not there. And if we move the title in front of date, we still have the error because it's not in the expected order. So the order of elements really matters if we do them comma separated. And we basically always do them comma separated. Besides, if we want to use alternatives. So this vertical line is used for alternatives. We could say, for example, here. Now I have to remember how to do it on this Mac. Okay, I do it differently. I use this. We could do it like this. That means a stanza has either the language or the line element. we can see here the stencil has the red line under. That means it has an error because right now it contains both language and line element, but we defined it as an alternative. It can just have one of them. So if we now remove the language, the error is gone. So those are the only two options besides some workarounds to get to define the order of elements. So we always define the order with comma separated. Please remember that, because in exams I quite often see errors in the way that students just use the vertical line to separate the all the child elements of an element. But actually that would mean that just one of the child elements would be allowed at the same time. But to make this clear, let's go to some okay or nots. Look at this example. You have up there the DTD, where we define our language, and then the XML document. Is this a valid XML document? We have one no. Someone else? Can you explain your no? Because I might think that you think the no because of the simplicity that we put in there. Exactly. But in this example and the following examples, we didn't define them. Imagine they are defined as PC data. Is it then valid?
Yes.
Do you understand? Did all of you understand what the comment was? Okay. Let's go to the test XML. We had this case, right? So the comment was, not all elements are defined. We are defining that A has the child elements B and C, but elements B and C are not defined. So we basically would have to do if we do this, everything is okay. Now, this is a valid XML document. You can see we have here A with the child elements B and C, comma separated, so they are in successive order. And in the document, we have A with the two child elements B and C. If we continue here, what about this? Is this a valid XML document? No? Anyone of other opinion? Can you say why it's not a?
Only B or C.
Exactly. Here, with the vertical line, we say we give alternatives. Only B or C is allowed. So this would be okay. and this would also be okay. But with this option, with the alternative, we can't have both child elements. Also, if we use this, okay, in Eclipse now you can of course see that there is an error because the A is underlined. So no, this is also not valid. Can anyone say why? Exactly, the order is wrong. So we don't have B, C. We define for A as first the child element B and then the child element C. Remember, the comma separation, successive, always in the order that we write them. So you can see it's very restrictive in a way. We can't give a flexibility on how to write the XML document. And that is one of the weaknesses of DTD, while other languages were developed. Okay, I can jump over those. And then, as you have seen in some of the examples, we have meta symbols. So, with meta symbols, we can, in a way, restrict child elements. We have the question mark. The question mark says it's optional. So this child element can be there, but doesn't have to be there. So question mark means zero or one occurrences. We have the plus. The plus means one or more occurrences. The star, zero or more. And then we have alternatives and grouping. If we look again at the poem document, you can see here in this document the author has a plus behind it. So that means in this case the plus means one or more occurrences. That means the document can have more than one author, because a poem could have more than one author. So if we add another author, there is no error, because we defined there can be multiple of this document. But then, if we would remove all the authors, we get an error, because with the plus we say one or more. Zero is not allowed. If we would add here a star, the star says zero or many. The error disappears because the now zero is allowed. You can see the same. The plus is used for the stanza because there are two stanzas in this poem, and then we don't have to define it. We could as well, if we want to have if we want to have two authors and two stanzas, we could also write it like this. But now we restrict exactly. It has to have two authors, it has to have a date, a title, and then two stanzas. So it's much more restrictive. But if we want to create a language where we want to have flexibility, that it can have multiple stanzas, not all the poems have the same amount, or not all poems have the same amount of authors, we can use the meta symbols to make that happen, make that easier. And with the groupings and alternatives, we could, for example, here add a grouping that we say that we use this, for example. Do you understand what this would mean? Someone, can you explain what this would mean? What kind of child elements would the poem have? Exactly. So here we would say it can just have date or title in this case. And as it has both, we again get an error. The same, you can see, okay, now we added the language, but can remove that again. Also, the line has the plus here, which again means the stanza can have multiple lines, but has to have one as a child element. So, that is what meta symbols are used for. Then, any questions about this so far? Then there is one special or a bit more complex kind of element, which actually to define is the easiest of all, if you know how to do it. It's the element that contains mixed content. Mixed content means the element contains character data, so text, and child elements at the same time. So in our example, if we would want to have, let's say, the author has two child elements. First and last. But the author element itself should still have some kind of content, whatever that would be. Then we would have child elements and text in the element. Here are some examples. You can see we have the paragraph element. The paragraph element contains the bold element and the italics element, but also is not part of any of the two child elements. So the paragraph element contains both the child elements bold and italics, and the text. The same goes for this one, etc. So they have mixed content. And one thing about mixed content elements, we cannot restrict the order or amount of child elements in mixed content. So, interestingly, all of these could be defined with the exact same grammar rule. If we have mixed content, we always, as you remember, element, element name, then we always start with the hashtag PC data. We always use the alternatives and then the child elements. And important, we always have the star in the end. So, as an example, if we want in our new file, no, in our, what was it? In our new file here, if we want to have here this content in the A element. First of all, I just change this order. So, without this, this would be the right form to define our language. But if for some reason we say this should also have the content, then we always have to start here with PC data, then the line. The child elements are with the line, and we always have to have the star in the end. We always have to have the star in the end, because we cannot restrict the amount of child elements. In this case now, because we cannot restrict the child elements or the order of the child elements, we could have here C B again a C, etc. Because with a mixed content one, we don't restrict the amount or the order of child elements. So now I, of course, could remove the content again. And that's what I said if we don't use a workaround, because we could always use this as a workaround to not restrict in any way the amount of child elements or the order of the child elements. Now we can add B and C in any amount of number and any amount of order as child elements of A. But the important thing to remember, if you define a mixed content element, you don't have to think, because it's always exactly in this form. You just start with PC data, then the vertical line, and then all the child elements. So if we would want to add more elements, we would just do etc. So it's always exactly this format. You don't have to think about the order of the elements, how often the element could or should occur, if the A could or should have two Bs or B, C, in which order, etc. That makes it a bit more complicated, because the PC data in there makes it a bit more complicated. But if you know it once, it's very, very simple. And please remember this. In exams, I always see errors in this. And I can't really understand why, because it's always exactly the same. Just remember how to define mixed content. And then, of course, you can exchange the child elements and the name of the element as you like. Okay, I have now on the slides again some okay or nots. B and C are again not defined, so please assume they are. It's just to understand the structure. Okay, is this okay or not? Many no's? Anyone thinks yes? Okay, anyone want to try an explanation why it's not okay? Maybe someone else? Yeah, but ignore that B and C are not defined in this. It's just about the structure of the A element now. Exactly. B has the plus behind it. Plus means one or many occurrences. There is no B, so it can't be okay. What about this? Again, ignore the not defined elements B and C. I heard several times it's okay. And yes, it's okay. B can occur many times. C is optional. It has the question mark 0 or 1. In this case, it's 0. Next example, this one. No? Anyone of other opinion? Yes, it's not okay, because we have an alternative, but both elements occur. If we would have a comma separation instead of the vertical line, it would, of course, be okay. And last example. Anyone from more in the back with an opinion? No opinions? If you have questions, then please ask them. So, the front says it's okay. What does the back say? Well, yes, it's okay. It's a mixed content, so there is no restriction on the order or the amount of child elements. So basically, whatever order and amount we write here, it's okay, as long as we don't write any element that is not listed here. Everything is okay. Example 6, this one. We have the vertical line. So we have B plus or C. So we have one too many Bs or 0 or 1 C. So the vertical line always defines an or, an alternative. It can't be both. So in this case, A can either contain one too many Bs or 0 or 1 Cs, but not both at the same time. In the mixed element, it doesn't matter. But this is not the mixed element. And in the mixed element, it doesn't matter because the meta symbol is at the end, which means A contains as many times as you want this alternative, if you understand what I mean. So here, you can also add meta symbols behind the bracket. Then it, of course, counts for the full bracket. So what that means, as an example, if we would remove this, then it's still okay now, because A contains 0 too many times C or B or D or E. So the first element is either a C, D, B, or E, and it can contain a second time a C or a D or a B or a E, etc. If we put a plus here, it's the same. It just means it has this choice more than once. So this is there. You can use the meta symbols as well. Then it refers to the full option. But if we would make here now a comma separation, then it would mean it has to have the sequence C, B, D, E one or many times. So now it has to have C, B, not S, D, and E, and it can have this sequence multiple times. So then the meta symbol refers to the full bracket, but that is something you I would say in this course you don't really need. We don't go that far, but it gives, of course, more flexibility again to order, give constraints or no constraints to the order of elements. Are there any other questions?
What if I want to make a child element for B, then I just have to define it there?
If you want to define a child element here for B,
yeah,
let's call it F. Done.
Okay.
B needs, you can see, if you can see, B has now the little red dots under it. So now it's an error because B now has to have the child element F. Now we add it. Now everything is fine again. If we want to have that B has text and F, we again have to use the... Now I don't have that anymore here. One second. It sucks on a MacBook. Then we do this, and now B could also have text here and here. So that's all very easy to add a child element to any other element. Okay. Any other questions?
On the last slide, if you go back, if you change the asterisk plus, would that then fail when it also, if one of the B or C didn't appear, if there's plus, would be that one?
Well, the thing is, it might work. So you mean if we add a plus here? It works, but the convention is, so this one doesn't show an error because it is syntactically correct, like the element fits to the DTD, but the XML convention, the XML specification says for mixed element we always have to use the star. So and some applications might be more restrictive. You don't know what necessarily application the XML document will be used in. And if you then don't follow the specification, even if it works in your local system, if it is transferred somewhere else, it might break. Okay. Any other question? Okay, this is all you need to know about element declaration. That's how you define the tree structure in XML. That's everything. The next thing we have are attributes. I know Henry started briefly with attributes last time. Attributes in XML, let's say, are a dying breed. They are used very, very rarely, mainly just for giving additional information, just for the computer, like IDs of specific content, or like specify the language of the content, etc. The problem of attributes is that they are very hard to maintain, much harder than elements. So if you want to change the structure, etc., it's a lot more work to change attributes than to change elements. And when using DTD, attributes are stupid. They are really stupid. You will see that soon, because we have just a very limited amount of attribute types. So with a DTD, we can't restrict what kind of content the element, the attribute should have. So we can call an attribute date, but someone might just write in their university, and it's absolutely fine. The system won't say anything about it. So when using DTD, attributes are really stupid. That's why other languages like the XML schema came, where we can really define the content of an attribute. Because if you think about a practical application, let's think about we have an attribute. We have two computer systems that communicate with each other using XML documents. And the one system has to send the outcome of a calculation to the other system. So if you know a bit of programming, you have different types of numbers in programming. You have integer, you have float, etc. And then the second system expects that it gets a number, let's say an integer number, so a no comma number bigger than zero or something like that. But there is no restriction in the first system what the content of this attribute that should send over the information should be. So for some odd reason, the entry in this attribute is suddenly 3.7. No problem, because we can't restrict it with a DTD. We send it to the new system. The new system, it expects a full number and breaks down because there is a wrong entry, throws some exception, and our work process is stopped. So that's the big problem of using attributes with DTD, and that's why other languages, other grammars were developed. Nevertheless, you should learn how to declare attributes. It's basically the same or as simple as elements. So with attributes, we attach information to elements by a name-value pair. What does that mean? For example, if we have just, let's say, a document, we say, okay, this is document A, and we can just say, okay, document A has the attribute ID with the ID 1. So we know this is the attribute with a number 1. All attributes have to be declared, like all elements have to be declared. And with the attribute declaration, we say to which element it belongs. We say what type of attribute it is. As I said before, we can constrain a lot there. We can say if it is default value, or if it is required, or if it's not required, etc. You will see that. The syntax of an attribute is similar to the element, the smaller than exclamation mark at list, because we define the attribute list. And then first we give the element name, so to which element does this attribute belong, then the attribute name, the attribute type, and the default declaration. What is default declaration? The default declaration basically just tells the validator, the processor, whoever, whatever in the computer has to work with it, if this attribute has to be there, doesn't have to be there, if it has a preset value. We can use required, so the attribute always has to be provided. We can use implied, may be provided, doesn't have to, etc. If you think about XML formula, or if you think about web forms where you have to put in your information, you quite often see, is a field required or not? If we do it with attributes, it's the same thing. You say, this attribute has to be there, this attribute doesn't have to be there. So this is, again, abstracted, so the element is not defined. Don't worry about that. Here, we define an attribute. It belongs to the element person. The attribute has the name number, and it is of the type cData. What the types mean, we will go through soon. C data, remember, PC data elements, C data attributes. C data means text, any kind of text. And it says it is required. So, in valid XML, person has to have the attribute number and some value of the attribute. Here you can see numbers count, for example, as text. Everything counts as text. Another important thing that you can see here already, the value of an attribute always has to be in those hyphens. Always. There is no exception. So it's always when you write an XML document, element, then a space, then the attribute equals, and then the value in hyphens. One important thing that I also see quite often as errors in exams, here is a space. There is no comma, not anything else. It's a space. If after this follows another attribute, there is a space, no comma, not anything else. So attributes are just space separated. And here you can see if we use an empty element person, it's invalid because we define this this attribute as required. So if you don't want to have an option or give a default value, you can use the required, because then this value has to be provided. Most popular, for example, in IDs, if you have a storage of documents, you want that every single document has an ID, no exception. So you can, if the ID is an attribute, you mark it as required. The second option is implied. Implied means optional. So again, we define an attribute to the element contact. The attribute has the name fax. It's again text, and here it is implied. So if we have it or not, both are valid. You can see again, you use the hyphens for the value. Then with this, we can just fix the value. I also rarely have seen this in any action, but it's possible. We define an attribute for the element sender, an attribute name company of text. Here we have the hashtag fixed as the keyword, and then we can give here in hyphens already the value, and then in the document, the value always has to be Microsoft. If we add something else, it's invalid. Also, in most smart XML processors, if we give a fixed attribute and we forget it, it will add it automatically. But in the not smart ones, we will get an error. Unfortunately, we don't know if we deal with a smart or a not smart one. Okay, then we have the attribute type. Here you learned already the C data, which is a string type attribute. We have multiple string type attributes. Then we have tokenized types and an enumerated type. I will go through some. I will tell you which ones you have to know, which ones you don't have to know for this. First, C data. Again, don't mess up with PC data. Where do you use PC data? Elements and C data in attributes. String type attribute using C data is just any kind of content, basically. We can use natural language, we can use numbers, no restriction. Then we have tokenized types. We have entities, NM token, NM tokens, ID, ID ref, and ID refs. First of all, for this course, you can forget everything with an S in the end. We don't use the plurals. And also, while I think It might be that in one of the exercises this ID, that ID ref is used, and we go through it here. ID ref and ID refs will definitely not be part of the exam. I won't go through entity, because entity is more for the physical structure, which Henry will do in 2 weeks. So with the entity attribute, you can link to external content. You can link to an external document or a picture or something like that to include. So that's why it's more the physical structure that defines how it interacts with other documents. So that's why we don't do it here. NM token, and again, you will just use NM token, not NM tokens here. I used, or the idea is that they are names. Unfortunately, as a restriction, NM token can't have separators. No space is allowed, no tab is allowed. So if we have like two names, like computer, mouse, we have to use a hyphen, a comma, etc. To write the name. That's all. Otherwise, it's also string. So if you just have one word, it doesn't matter if you use cData or if you use NM token. It's just for us usually that we say this is a name. Okay. Then we have ID. We have the types ID ref and ID refs. As I said, ID ref and ID refs not for the exam. And somehow XML has a very, very weird convention. Numbers are not allowed to be the first character of an ID, which is not really intuitive. Usually, if we think about an ID, we think about 1, 2, 3, etc. Please remember this. If we define an ID, we always have to start with a character. It's many XML validators don't show it as an error because they are less restrictive. But again, if you encounter then some system that is more restrictive, it might cause a problem. And how do we define an ID? Okay, we define an attribute for the element article name ID, very important. It has the name ID and the type ID, and it is required. So in the XML document, we can write this. And this is really important because it's also a very common mistake that either that not all three of these things are there. So either the element is forgotten to which the attribute belongs, or the name of the attribute is forgotten, or especially if it's ID, just one ID is written, because in this case it's name and type at the same time. So make sure you always have element name, attribute type. I will quickly say something about ID ref and ID refs. So the idea of ID ref and ID refs is to refer to an ID attribute. It can just be used in a single document, obviously, but you can refer to an ID. What does that mean? If we look at the example, we can see, okay, we have two attributes defined, both for the element contact. One is called contact number, one is called mother. And the contact number is ID, and the mother is ID ref. So in the XML document, we have the element contact with the contact number 2 and contact information. And then in the second contact, we have the attribute contact number 1. And then the implied, so the optional attribute, mother 2, So we know these are related. Of course, the computer doesn't understand that it is the mother of the one, but this way we can could reference one entry in an XML document to another, which in some applications might be useful. That's how IDREF is used. As I said, not necessary in this course, but I think it's interesting to know that something like this is possible. Again, important thing, you can see here we have two attributes, and these attributes are just space separated. No comma, no nothing. Okay, again, like with the mixed content, we have one special type of attribute, and that is the enumerated type. With the enumerated type, we give options for the element content. Again, if you think about a web form, you have drop-down menus where you can select the country or the gender or something. You don't have a free text field where you can put it in. You just have two options, and that's what we can define here. So, and as it options, we define them as alternatives. So we define an attribute for the element report. It has the name face, and it can have the content draft, comments requested, or final. Those three values for this attribute are allowed. We can then also give a default value, which is draft. So if we think about some kind of application, a very common way to use it is language. You store documents, you know, okay, we just allow documents in English and Finnish. Then you can just restrict, okay, the attribute content is allowed to be English and Finnish. We are in Jyväskylä, so we know the standard language will be Finnish. We give Finnish as the default value for this attribute. But it can be changed to English if it's necessary. So those are the main applications for this. So again, here we define an attribute with @list for the element payment, named type. It can have the content either check or cash. The default value is cash. And then both of these are allowed. No other value would be allowed. XML has two predefined attributes which have these names, XML space and XML lang. There is no requirement to use them. So XML space, I also never used it, is used to create empty space on a page. So if you want to create some empty space on a document, this is what you can do. And you can see with the predefined ones, this one belongs to poem, and it has then the name, actually, XML space, and these two possible values. XML lang, for language, may be used, doesn't have to. Here we can see the example, poem with the name XML lang, options Finnish and English, standard value is Finnish. But if we would remove the XML lang and just write lang, it would do exactly the same thing. So there is no reason to use it besides that some systems might actually understand, okay, this is a language. Let's get to the more complex one. This one. Now you should understand the full DTD that is written there. Okay? we have the root element poem with author that can be there zero or many times, then a date that can be there or cannot be there, title that has to be there, and zero to many stanzas. We then define author as a child, as a mixed content element, so it can have text, it can have titles and birthplace. What does that mean? You can see here it has the name, then it has titles. Here we could add whatever title, but as we learned, no restrictions. We can also remove this, everything stays the same. And the rest stays the same from before. And then we define the attributes. So first we define an attribute for the element author. The attribute name is gender. The two options are male and female. Nowadays you probably have to add another option or another couple of options. I don't know how many there are now, but we could easily add just another option. Now the gender X would also be allowed. So if we write here X, all is good. If we write here epsilon, you can see we get an error because it's not an allowed gender in our document or in our language. We have here the attribute also for the element author. Name is the name of the attribute, and cData is the type, and it is required, so it has to be there. Now we of course have here redundant information, but you can see as we use cData, this is okay. But if we would change this now to an M token, we should get an error somewhere. Maybe this is nice and doesn't give us an error. But by XML convention, this isn't allowed because there is a space in here and it shouldn't have that. We then have for the title, again, an enumerated type. It can be English, Finnish, German. Standard is English. Here, I could also write XML lang. Of course, then I have to write that here as well. Would do exactly the same thing, no change. We have an ID type attribute named stanzer ID for the element stanzer that is required, and an ID type attribute for the line named line ID that is implied. You can see here one line has this attribute, others don't. Now I want to see if Eclipse gives an error if we do that. It goes red here, so yes. But not really, just a warning. Just gives a warning. Okay. And that is all there is to know about attributes. Questions? Anyone? No questions? Okay. Then I guess we also don't have to add any additional attributes here. Just remember always the at list, element name, then attribute name, the type, and if it is required or not. Okay. As I said before, attributes are not that often used because there are some problems with them. Attributes cannot contain multiple values. Of course, we can always just have one value at a time in an attribute. So here the problem would be if we define the name of the author and we suddenly want to define a second name of the author. I don't know why we would do that, but we couldn't give a second value to the same attribute. Attributes cannot contain tree structure, so no structure in attributes, there is a value in the attribute, that's it. And one thing about the general tree structure, there are some languages or some tree versions where you also display here the attribute, for example, without any circle around or with a box around or something like that. So if you encounter something like that, there are many different ways how to write XML trees. Some provide more information, some provide less. And it's a problem to expand attributes, to change them, and they are difficult to read and maintain because there is no general structure in them. Okay, but I think that's it for today. Here are the additional readings again, if you want to read about this stuff again. Also, of course, the lecture was recorded, if you want to look at the recording. But thank you very much. And next week, unfortunately, I will be traveling. So Tony, who also holds the session on Thursday, will take care of the second part of the logical structure. And remember to give in your exercise.